Hello and welcome to another episode of City on a Hill, a podcast about what it means to be a citizen of heaven and a citizen of the United States. We want to encourage Christians to find their tribe in the church and their hope in the kingdom of God, rather than to seek both in the kingdom of man. So with that, let's get to it today.
Well, hello, my name is Eric Estep.
And I'm Scott Reevely.
And this is the City on a Hill podcast. Welcome back. And we, a while ago, we talked through some of the different ideologies, and one of our episodes was infamously named, You Are All Liberals. And so I liked that title. So I want to talk more about liberalism. That was one of my favorite titles. And just as a rehash of that, liberalism, to remind us, is the political doctrine that emphasizes individual autonomy. There's other pieces there, protection of individual rights, equality of opportunity, things like that. But for our discussion today, individual autonomy is the key piece.
We might say it's a key value.
Key value, yep.
And see, when you put it in terms of a value, then you've got liberalism. Mm-hmm. That we want to talk about, because right. When you get that kind of liberalism and that's your value, then then everything else kind of rises and falls on how does it affect the individual.
Right, right. And just I'm reminded back to that that episode. We're not talking about the quote unquote left side of the spectrum. We're talking about all of us. Mm-hmm. We are all liberal because we live in a liberal society that values individual autonomy, values the individually expressed rights or acting out of rights, and that can have flavor of the left side of the aisle or flavor of the right side of the aisle, and they express themselves a little bit different. But at the end of the day, if you live in America, in our political system, you really care about being an individual. You really care about being able to be who you are and not have to change because someone else wants something different from you. What's the phrase? You do you. That's classic.
Yeah, I'll do me, you do you.
Exactly. So individual expression, individual autonomy, that's the soup we're swimming in this world, not just this world, in this country. But that's also, because of that value, it's going to affect the way we do religion in this world, religion in this country. The temptation is to keep that individual, keep it.
The interesting thing, I think, is that value puts pressure on itself. Mm-hmm. Because you're liberal, I'm liberal. I want to express my individualism. You express your individualism. It is not very long until our individualisms bump into one another.
Right.
So that's...
They will be at odds
quickly. That's the simplest way maybe to think about it. One of the books I've recommended before that's not an easy read, but it explains our modern world in liberal terms, is The Rise and Triumph of the Modern Self by Carl Truman. And he takes up this pressure and he says, there is a tendency among social conservatives to blame expressive individualism for the problems that they regard as currently putting a strain on the liberal Western order, particularly as it manifests itself in the chaos of identity politics. And I'm going to stop and just wanted you to notice that expressive individualism puts a strain on the liberal Western order, which is what we're talking about, because the individualism strains the liberal or individual Western order, which is really interesting. And then he goes on to say, the difficulty with this claim is that the expressive individualism is something that affects us all. It is the very essence of the culture of which we are all a part. That's what Eric said, that it's the soup we swim in. Then he says, Truman says, to put it bluntly, we are all expressive individuals now. Mm. In really every way. You know, people want the freedom to express their sexuality, the freedom to express their opinion, the freedom to express their virtue or whatever value, other values they may have, they want that. And so all of us are expressive individuals. And there is one of the the things that he talks about is that this book that he wrote on the rise and triumph of the modern self, he says it's looking at the historical development of the relationship between society at large and individual identity. Mm. And so that's, in some respect, that's what we want to take up today, because the challenge, in order for this to really work, for this liberalism to work, some things have to remain guarded or private. In other words, if I'm out there with everything, my things I'm out there with are going to bump into the things you're out there with, and pretty soon we have this, we have pressure on the system because of our liberalism. Mm-hmm. And we have that, and really what I was, the more I think about it, the more this liberalism invites us to keep our religion, for instance, that's I guess what I want to talk about, religion private. And in keeping it private, it means that it doesn't affect the world or my world in the same way. For instance, this has a really long religious history too, because especially Baptist history. Mm. Roger Williams was the first Baptist in America, and I think it was he came in 1635, and it was probably 1640, 1645 or so when he wrote his book Liberty of Conscience, where he articulated the fact that you cannot coerce a man's conscience. Mm. In other words, you had to have the liberty of conscience or the freedom to make up your own mind, and you can't put a test on a, for instance, this was his issue, you can't put a religious test on a public office. Mm. In order, you can't make somebody go to church in order to hold office or to be considered a citizen in the city or whatever. And that, his argument is religious, which I think is fine. I'm not going to say that it has to be fine, right? Mm-hmm. You can't coerce someone to believe in Jesus in a saving way. That sentence doesn't even make sense. So you have to admit that, and then say, okay, what are the implications of that? And when the implications roll out from religion into public life, then all of a sudden, what are you expected to do with your religion when you become public? Mm. And that's some of the issue, and really one of the reasons that we're thankful to live in this country and have a First Amendment.
Right.
Because the First Amendment is set, I think, in part to acknowledge, number one, acknowledge this liberty of conscience or this liberalism by saying the state's not going to decide that for you. The state's not going to establish a religion, and the state is going to give you the opportunity to exercise freely. And then, of course, there's all sorts of decisions we have to make about what does free exercise look like.
Free exercise. Well, and I want to point out that Roger Williams, the things that he was supporting, the things he was writing about, trying to confirm, those overlay onto the liberal ideal. That's a great thing. And the whole idea about ideologies, and the reason we talked so much about Coises' book, is that an ideology grabs something good and then takes it too far, makes that good thing a God thing. That's not Coises' language, but... So what I see here with liberalism is a direction being charted, and then, no, you went too far in that direction, which is where you get that just rampant expressive individualism from this direction of liberty. We're not going to coerce conscience. We're not going to allow the state to say, here's what y'all got to believe now. And with that direction, now it's no one can tell me what to believe. There's no truth now. And it truth is only defined by me. Yeah. Because you set the chart, or you chart the course, and set the direction with the emphasis on that value.
I think that's a good way to think about it. I smile even as you say that about Roger Williams, because he was the first Baptist in America for 4 or 5 years, and then
and then Second Baptist,
and then he couldn't get along, right? And he couldn't, and so he essentially stepped away from that for that very reason. Because he, you know, his conscience bumped into other people's conscience, and he wasn't going to submit. He couldn't live in community, in any in a church community, even in a meaningful way, which is, you know, that's the direction. The direction's fine. I think the direction's better than a different direction. But he went down that far enough that he couldn't live in this community of Christ in a meaningful way. So he ended up stepping away, which...
Well, I think the direction is fine, better than many other directions. I'm just pondering all the different governments in the entirety of the world, and there's a lot of bad directions. But you, and this is more than this show, but you need the community. You're just referencing not being able to engage community. The individual needs community to put them on the right direction as well, to help them believe the right things. And if it's just the state and me, okay, there's so many institutions in between that are not even part of that story. And it's just, well, the state can't establish religion, and religion only belongs in my brain, and it doesn't go anywhere else. That's not how the world works. That's not how specifically Christianity works. There's community involved. There's, I belong to this community, I belong to this institution, and it will form me and correct me and bear my burdens and all those things. It's not just an individual private thing.
But I think you're on to some of the tension, and that's, I think, a key word when we're talking about this privatization of my belief, is that there is tension because I know I can't just, you know, make you believe anything or make you go my way. And so there's a tension that really I can't resolve. And even the farther I go down this liberal inclination and value, the more I expect that that there will be a privatization of belief, I think, and that our beliefs will remain separate from one another. And so it does. You talked about all these intermediate institutions, you know, whether it's bowling leagues or, you know, VFWs or any
family, kind of, church.
Okay, yeah. You know, there are a lot of things in between. And the reality is, when I am ultimately value my own individuality, I am missing out on those communities in a way that I have to limit that in some regard. So it's just a tension, but I've been noticing the pressure to make opinions private, and that is, I think, a liberal inclination on my part. At least that's kind of what drives it, is that I want other people to keep theirs to themselves. That's so, I suppose, fair. But when I do, what that means is that they are then, you know, their private opinion shouldn't be better or somehow trump mine either. So this is private, and I think a pressure that the people in the Christians feel, because I know you'll get pushback. It says, well, don't bring your religion here, because that's a matter between you and God. That's a private matter or some such thing. And when you hear that impulse, and I suppose, Eric, if you're running, you're going to hear that, and that's a liberal impulse, and it sounds like ultimate, but it really is only just, that's liberalism at work. It's interesting. I went back and looked and thought, how did we get here, and what kinds of language have our public figures used along the way when they've talked about their faith? And it was interesting that they're one of the most religious kinds of it's not religious, but he affected quite a bit of religious change as a president was Eisenhower. That's probably the best way to say it, because Billy Graham encouraged him to join a church, and he originally resisted the idea, and he thought that it might just look political, and he felt that his faith was private. So anyway, Billy Graham convinced him to join a Presbyterian church. And Eisenhower just began to process all of this, and it said in Christianity Today a couple years ago, it says that he made it a priority in his administration to promote belief in God and religion in very general terms. He saw religion as a spiritual resource in the Cold War conflict with communism. He added "under God" to the Pledge of Allegiance and promoted a National Day of Prayer. He spoke frequently about the importance of a deeply felt religious faith, most famously when he said, "Our form of government has no sense unless it is founded on a deeply felt religious faith, and I don't care what it is." That's pretty interesting, isn't it? And the article summarizes it this way. It says, "Most Americans came to see Eisenhower as a very religious president, though some critiqued him for being specific about his faith. He seemed to promote a generic American religion which had nothing to do with Jesus or any particulars about God or any theological content. He seemed to have, one person said, a very fervent belief in a very vague religion."
That's a great quote.
Yeah, both of those I think are good. His own words, that unless it's found a deeply felt religious faith, I don't care what it is. Mm. Again, I'll do me, you do you.
Right.
We're going to be liberals here, and there's something about that faith that's of value to the public good, mm-hmm. but it doesn't matter what it is.
Well, that goes back to our discussion on civil religion. Mm-hmm. Many, many, many episodes ago, and it's acknowledging the need. There's you need a narrative that gives you answers to the bigger story, and it's like getting halfway there. Like, mm-hmm. I don't really care, but you need a story, and I don't know what your story is, which I think is incomplete, and thus deficient. But it's pointing that direction. That's why people emphasize the civil religion. That's why there's the National Cathedral and all those type of things. We need a story to build things upon. Otherwise, it falls apart.
Well, it is interesting that Eisenhower chose a religious story. Mm-hmm. While there, you know, the pressure that we feel now, probably, and at least in Oregon, is a secular story. But the reality is there's a story. Somebody is shaping the narrative. There's some place where policies and people and politics all fit, and it's some kind of story. And I think the liberal aspect of that is the inclination is to say, well, you keep your story separate, I'll keep my story separate, but somebody's telling the story.
Right.
Somewhere there's a story. And I think we have to acknowledge that and say that the story of Jesus somewhere intersects the story of this world. The story of the kingdom of heaven somehow has to intersect the story of the kingdom of this world. Mm-hmm. And when it did, Jesus got crucified.
Right.
So it doesn't intersect in a super easy way. Let's say it that way.
Right.
You know, I was, I said I was looking for the way public figures have interacted with us, because we're recording this on the day that Russia attacked Ukraine, and President Biden has had all kinds of difficult foreign affairs in his short tenure, and just during the campaign, the NPR says that Trump was trying to define Biden as a godless man, and that was not really working, because Biden was a Democratic politician whose faith had been in public view for a long time, and it is a tendency, according to NPR, it just says this: "I think one of the mistakes Democrats have made over the decades is to be very private about the values that move them into public life." He says, "If we, as many Democrats in elected office have for 20 years, hide that or don't speak about that, millions of Americans are left wondering what drives you." Mm. And that article was suggesting that President Biden hasn't been silent about that. But
well, that goes back to the story piece. What people want to know what drives you, which is another way of saying, what's your story? What's the big story that is defining the way you put the world together?
And the same kind of thing, I mean, Biden being a Catholic, Kennedy, of course, was the first Catholic president, and he was invited to speak at the Greater Houston Ministerial Association on September 12th of 1960 to a group of Protestant ministers on the issue of religion. And at the time, those Protestants questioned whether his Roman Catholic faith would allow him to make important national decisions as a president independent of the church. And so he addressed those concerns to the Protestant clergy by saying this. And I think this has shaped the narrative really for public office since then. He said, "This is the kind of America in which I believe, and it represents the kind of presidency in which I believe. A great office that must neither be humbled by making it the instrument of any one religious group, nor tarnished by arbitrarily withholding its occupancy from the members of any one religious group. I believe in a president whose religious views are his own private affair, neither imposed by him upon the nation or imposed by the nation upon him as a condition to holding that office." And some of that language, and really a lot of the language in that whole speech, if I were to quote the whole thing, is First Amendment kind of language. But the First Amendment is a liberal document.
Right, right.
And is giving us this same privatization kind of thing. And I just think it's worth talking about the impulse to keep your stuff to yourself.
When I'm just making this observation now, Eisenhower, prior to that speech, it had the vague, fervent belief in a vague religion, but Protestant to some degree. And then Kennedy comes on the scenes, and seen in this Protestant group is concerned because they know that Catholicism is a total understanding of life. There's a concern about, okay, what are you going to do, Mr. President, if you're Catholic? This is how life is organized in a total fashion. There is no, okay, where's the politics box and where's the private religion box? So it's interesting to me that the Protestants were concerned about that because they almost already had a box for that.
Well, I think they were concerned partly because of the Pope. Because you've got this authority, and somebody who's Catholic would be under the authority of the Pope, which is one of the reasons we all left Europe.
Right. Well, definitely that. But also, the Protestants didn't have that question asked of themselves.
Exactly.
I think that's because they were more influenced by their liberalism as far as politics is concerned than they were their Protestantism. Because there is a total aspect of life their Christianity should have been. And so people should have been going, well, what about your Christianity? What to Eisenhower or something. But there was it seems to be more liberal than it is.
Well, in some respect, I think this is interesting you bring it up, and I'm just sort of figuring this out as probably after I speak.
lukewarm takes right here, folks.
There you go. But really, the Protestant Reformation was in some degree a liberal assertion that someone else is not going to tell us what to do or what to believe. We are able to process this individually, and the individual justification by faith even was that's not how the
priesthood of believers.
That's not how Christianity was processed before the Protestant Reformation. So it precedes the Enlightenment, but it's nonetheless, it has that sort of flavor to it. So these Protestants that you're talking about then at this Houston gathering would have been probably just more liberal in the individual sense than a Catholic would be, because you're not mediated by the church in Protestantism. You just are a priesthood of believers. You're on your own with the Lord. So it's interesting when you think about that, and then, okay, that has all kinds of trickle-down effect then when you get to America and you set up a government and you decide how we're going to run the show. If it's Protestant, and that was a big concern in the founding, then it's going to be more liberal than it would be otherwise. So,
well, and when you say the Reformation being liberal, that's back to that small kernel of this is a good idea, and liberalism takes that small idea and makes it too large. And again, direction, and you're back to that initial problem that we're describing now. That's helpful.
And so there's, in looking for, okay, what were people dealing with in the public world? I was trying to get my head around, okay, how did Donald Trump deal with this when he was president? And there's an article in the Washington Post and then another one in the Atlantic that talk about him this way. It says, Trump does not regularly talk about religion with many of his advisors, who said they knew little about how the president views God. Aides and supporters, including the vice president, have urged him to stop saying goddamn, a word particularly offensive to some Christians, and some have been perturbed by his use of profanity in the Oval Office. Some chafed at the questioning, at even the questioning, saying it was a private matter. Mm. And see, I think even that. So you have President Trump being fairly public about his desire, anyway, to defend Christians or defend religious freedom. And then when push comes to shove in the Oval Office, it's private matter.
Right.
And
fitting right into those categories again.
Yep. It just sort of sifts down in there. Even when it's public, it sifts down in there.
Mm-hmm.
The pastor of First Baptist Church Dallas, who has been a big Trump supporter, said, he articulated it this way. He said, I'm not voting for Trump to be the teacher of my third grader's Sunday school class. That's not what he's running for. So just even that preamble is a liberal kind of a preamble. He needs to be free to do him, right?
Right.
Not under the constraints of what a Sunday school teacher might have. I believe it is imperative that we do everything we can to turn people out or turn out the vote, he was talking about. The Faustian nature of the religious rights bargain with Trump has not always been quite so apparent to rank-and-file believers. According to the Pew Research Center, white evangelicals are more than twice as likely as the average American to say that the president is a religious man. And so there is, again, this, what makes somebody religious? Is it private? Is it public? Mm. Is it the fact that they agree with you? So it's just an interesting question, but I do think that one of the clearest articulations of it was Kennedy's articulation when he was talking about, I believe in a president whose religious views are his own private affair. To me, that has been sort of the voice of the public figures ever since.
That's really been the model.
Right.
Yeah.
And our expectation, mm-hmm. I think. I think that's some of the pressure, is the expectation that I'll do me and you do you, whether you're a public figure or not,
mm-hmm.
or that I'll do me and I want you also to do me, because if you have power and you are like me, then you'll make my thing work.
Right.
And I don't know that you can be liberal and have it both ways,
right?
Which is kind of interesting. And I think if the shoe's on the other foot and that person's not like me and they're going to do them, but they're also going to make me do them, mm-hmm. I'm not going to like that at all.
Right.
And that I'm liberal again in that way.
So there's much tension because we live in a liberal society and we're all liberals.
Yeah.
And we've talked about the higher... We talked about a bunch of presidents. We haven't talked about people below that, but mm-hmm. they're the ones most visible to us trying to navigate this. What do you do with religion in the public sphere? But how, I think we've described the temptation where we're Christians, we're assuming people listening to us are Christians or trying to figure out what it means to be Christian in a liberal society. There we go. Mm-hmm. So we've described the temptation. The temptation is to just go, Christianity is a private thing. I leave it in my individual sphere and it doesn't affect anything else. It's me and God. That's the temptation. But what's the right posture?
What's the solution? I know. I was just thinking about that. Really, are we just going to whine on this episode and not bring any kind of a hope or resolution? And probably, but
probably gonna we're going to whine.
Probably we're just going to whine.
Probably.
I think the way to see this is I'm looking at. I mean, what the conversation has been about religion in some respect is what do you believe, what private ideas do you hold that influence you? That's the way that it's been talked about, and that's essentially what fits most comfortably in this liberal narrative, shall we say.
I affirm XYZ, that can stay private.
Yes.
Yeah.
That and right. You have to affirm something that is able to stay private. Mm-hmm. See, and what is the right way? And I'm not going to say this is the right way, but I think we must acknowledge that the demands of Jesus are such that they don't stay private. Mm. In other words, what I'm believing believing in Jesus. And I say my faith is in him. I trust him as my savior. It also means I trust him as my king. Mm-hmm. And it also means I buy into his narrative of the world. Mm-hmm. See, and that's all of a sudden that no longer fits in a private liberal box because Jesus is asserting himself as king of this world. His kingdom is coming. Mm-hmm. And if I'm buying that story, that is a different story than either the right or the left. It doesn't, like we talked last week, doesn't fit on the continuum between the right and left. And so I'm left off here telling a story that is unable to remain private any longer. Mm-hmm.
When he uses that kind of language on the Sermon on the Mount, he's talking to the people that would belong to the kingdom. He says, "You are the light of the world, a city set on a hill."
There you go.
A city set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do people light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a stand, and it gives light to all in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. It's necessarily public. It's necessarily visible.
Right. And that keeps it from being fitting in a liberal ideology comfortably. And so in some respect, when we ask, is a public figure or president or something, is he a Christian? And if we mean, has he privately asked Jesus to be his savior and is he individually hoping to go to heaven? I think we're asking the wrong questions. I think we need to talk in terms as Christians that this allegiance to Jesus means that we're a city on a hill that may or may not fit into public life in any kind of comfortable way. And I don't know. That's the tension that is really hard to resolve. But I think what happens is liberalism, because it's not the full story, it tends to shrink the story so that it fits in this individualistic narrative that somehow allows us to navigate
right
in this world.
And that's the temptation. How much do I need to shrink Christianity so it easily fits in the liberalism box? Because we're comfortable with liberalism. We know this story very well. And if I can make Christianity small, if it just fits into me individually,
right,
then that's the problem. That's the tension. Because that's not the full story of the gospel. It's far bigger than that.
Right. And so the kingdom and the city on the hill and all of that essentially demands more of us than liberalism will accept. And when that happens, then there's going to be problems. And there has been. There was for Jesus. I think that's the thing that even when I go back, I think, okay, where in history did I see this? Well, I mean, Jesus was crucified. Because his narrative did not fit in the, with the overarching narrative of his religious culture and that. So anyway, all that to say that we have to think more about what it means for us to be liberals, number one, because we just don't think about that enough. Am I, and think in terms of, am I processing this as a liberal or am I processing this as a Christian? And is my narrative a story of individualism or is my narrative a story of Jesus and his coming kingdom? And as I'm, you know, as I'm thinking about the world, that those are big questions, and they're questions that do affect the way that I view the political sphere. I think, though, first I would say they affect the way I view the church, because I think it's very easy for us to all gather on a Sunday morning and sit side by side in my own little individual bubble. I might bump into somebody else's bubble, but we're going to go our separate ways and be our individual people, and we live kind of this autonomous existence as the Church of Jesus Christ. And that would be the first place that I would say, you know, there that liberalism is inadequate.
Yeah.
And then I would go perhaps to a public sphere and say, Jesus is presenting a politic that is not liberal. You know, it's not necessarily anything else either.
It's not preferred ideologies.
Right. That's a better way to say it. It's a kingdom politic, mm-hmm. and I'm going to have to adjust a lot of things in my life, including my liberalism, mm-hmm. to accommodate Jesus rather than adjust Jesus to accommodate my liberalism.
Mm-hmm. That's good. So there's going to be tension, and it's just, I guess, just realize there's tension and work on that as you go, and just be ready. Be ready to, yeah.
And don't shrink your Christianity to something that is comfortably private.
Right.
I guess that's the thing that as I'm, because this kind of all started as I was thinking about how liberalism encourages me to keep my faith private, encourages other people to keep theirs private. And what is private then is some smaller version of Christianity that's comfortably shrink-wrapped that keeps it away from other things. And that's, I don't see that working in the kingdom politic that Jesus is working with. So,
and it's not an appropriate response to the magnitude of the good news that Jesus proclaimed.
True.
Well, I hope that's helpful for all of you. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcasts, and rate us. If you find what we're doing helpful, a review goes a long way. You can send us an email as well. If there's something about today's episode that you're confused about, or you're not so sure about, or maybe you decide, no, I'm going to live a little bit more publicly with my faith, we would love to hear how that goes or what you decided to do. So send us an email. You can do that by sending one to comment@cityonahillpodcast.com. Make sure to share this podcast with a friend, and we will look forward to the next conversation.